Hello, and welcome to Managing Your Money, Tips on Personal Finance, Investing, Taxes, and More. Thank you for joining this Barron's call today on robo-advisors. I'm Beverly Goodman, Editorial Director, Investing and Asset Management for Barron's, and I'm on the line with Ken Shapiro, Head of Condor Capital, an advisory firm in New Jersey. He's also the founder of Backend Benchmarking, a research firm that follows the robo-advisor industry very closely. Barron's has partnered with Backend Benchmarking for our annual ranking of robo-advisors. We've been doing it 4 years now. And contributing writer Sarah Max wrote this year's story, and she joins us as well. So welcome, Ken and Sarah. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Beverly. It's great to be here.
Hi. It's great to be here.
Great. So just to set the stage a little, robo-advisors have been around for about a decade. They're basically, for those of you who aren't familiar, they're automated portfolios. The goal was to bring investment advice to the masses. So people that weren't seeing financial advisors could go to a platform and kind of purchase a one-stop shopping kind of product. They own multiple stock and bond funds, usually low-cost index mutual funds and or ETFs. Investors basically answer a few questions about their goals, their risk tolerance, maybe some other personal information, and they're put into an asset allocation plan that rebalances automatically, and they don't need to pick funds or even pick how much money they want in a particular kind of asset class. So these portfolios are now offered by many firms, including the kind of originals, Wealthfront and Betterment, and the older school firms like Charles Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, TD Ameritrade all offer them as well. This year's winner, or the top ranked, was SIGFID, but all 10 that we ranked performed admirably. So Sarah, let's start with you. What was the big takeaway from this year's ranking?
Well, you know, as we've seen with the market volatility we had in the first quarter, and to a certain extent throughout the first 6 months, all the uncertainty, it's been a time of really stress testing a lot of things. So prior to this, the big knock against the robos was that they really have been gaining traction in an up market, and how difficult can that be? So I think one of the big things was looking not just at performance in the first 6 months, but also looking at investor behavior. And I'll certainly let Ken talk about the performance side, but from the investor behavior side, a lot of the robos reported that not only did they not see panic selling, they saw new accounts opening, and in many cases, their customers were making additional contributions during this time of volatility.
Got it. Ken, anything you want to add to this year's ranking in particular?
You know, I think Sarah summed it up well. I think it was kind of interesting, too. We actually got the chance to test the robos in a down market and see how they could do tax loss harvesting and how they could do rebalancing, which is an important aspect that robo-advisors, you know, advertised about. But when they're in an up market for 5 or 10 years, you have very little chance to actually test that.
Everyone looks like a genius in a 10-year bull market, right?
Yep.
So let's back up a little bit. I'd like, Ken, to hear a little bit more about your background. You founded kind of a traditional independent advisory firm more than 30 years ago. Hope you don't mind. It's on your website. So you were just 23 when you founded this firm. So how, you know, and you still run this firm. So, like, what was the thinking in founding Backend Benchmarking? You know, you had a successful advisor business. What prompted you to start this new firm and focus on robo-advisors?
You know, it didn't start out as a new firm, right? I wish I could tell you that that's how the whole thing started. It really started kind of as a garage project, which is kind of funny because now I work in a garage in my man cave every day, but it didn't really start in the garage either. And, you know, we just wanted to see kind of, were these things algorithmic? You know, what kind of trading were they doing? That was really the beginnings of it. And what we found out early on was that it really wasn't the algorithmic trading that made these things special. It was really the onboarding and kind of the ancillary services, the online financial planning and retirement planning and those things that made a difference. And what really kind of made it into a company was just when we started publishing the performance, nobody had ever done that before. And the media went kind of crazy. Hundreds of articles, you guys helped make that decision for us a bit. And also, you know, when we saw how disruptive it was to the industry during the process, Wealthfront, Vanguard, and Goldman Sachs all tried to shut us down. They didn't want us publishing performance. They didn't think it was right or correct or within our First Amendment rights. And all of those things really made it into a company. And we spun it out of Condor and raised $3.8 million to put together an aggregation engine to kind of provide this type of information to all accounts. And we're still in that process.
Oh, wow. Fascinating. So can you walk us through the criteria that you use for the ranking and also if it's evolved at all in the 5 years you've been doing this?
Sure. So we started the ranking kind of the debut was 2 years ago. And during in the beginning, we just didn't have a long enough track record. And today we use a 2.5 year track record. Even though we have 4 years of performance data, we want to try to include kind of the most robos possible. We try to increase that number of years that we look back a half a year every year. And, you know, that has worked well for us. In the process too, there wasn't really a great way to compare disparate portfolios. There wasn't like an academic way to do this. You know, we try to target everybody in the 60-40, but sometimes we only get a 50-50 or a 40-60 or a 70-30. And so we came up with a methodology that we call normalized benchmarking so that the benchmark for each robo is exactly like the asset allocation of the actual robo. And so we use normalized benchmarking and the Sharpe ratio to kind of come up with the performance ranking for the robo ranking. And that represents 45%. And then we look at all the qualitative factors, and that makes up 55%. And this includes things like, do you have access to advisors? Is there online financial planning? What kind of transparency and conflicts of interest exist? Because some of these robos use proprietary funds and things like this. We look at all their features, what we grade them on a customer experience. We give them a little boost if they've been around for a long time or they have a lot of assets. We look at costs, which is, you know, a really important factor, as well as all the other qualitative pieces that go into actually a robo. And we sum that all up, and as I said, that represents 55% of the ranking.
Got it. So we have a handful of listener questions already, and I want to encourage listeners to write in with whatever's on their mind with regard to robos. but one question I want to tackle first, because apparently I didn't do a good enough job in my intro. Please define what a robo-advisor is and what it does. So let's back up a minute. Ken, do you want to take this? And Sarah, you can add on if there's any perspective you want to add. So how would you very simply,
Sure. So there, you know, in our definition, we look that they have an electronic onboarding process. That's the first distinctive piece that we need to determine whether it's a robo. And then we look at whether the actual experience itself is mostly an online experience. There's something called a hybrid situation where you do have access to advisors. And those are our kind of two distinct things that we want to see to determine that it's a robo.
So basically, you're going to a platform, whether it's like a Schwab or Fidelity or an independent, you know, a company that only provides robo advice, like a Betterment or SigFid, and you don't actually talk to a person, a human being. Like your interaction is entirely basically a Q&A that's done online, right?
That's correct. But as I said, some robos do have a personal experience that exists. That may be an upgraded service. That may be something that just happens in the onboarding process to assist the process. But it's the vast majority of it has to happen online.
Right. And so that's the robo part. And the advice part is that you get kind of this somewhat tailored, not necessarily super individualized, but based on those questions that you've answered online, you get a portfolio that tells you you should have this percentage of your money in large cap stocks and this percentage in small and this much in international, and the bond allocation, same thing. And it just sort of dumps all your, you know, you invest in just one lump sum, and the robo advisor divides it all up according to how you answered the question and rebalances every year, right? Anything?
Yep, you bring up a good point. Nope, you're doing a better job than myself. Yes, it does need that piece too. It needs the piece that actually creates a customized portfolio that could be in one of many sleeves or allocations. You know, a robo could have 20 or 40 different allocations that they could possibly use, and some, you know, have as few as 5 or 6.
Okay.
It's interesting, in reporting the story, actually the question for me came up quite a bit of what is a robo-advisor, because the lines really are blurred depending on which direction you're looking at this. You have some of the wealth fronts and the betterments that really just started as true robos, and then from the other direction, you have firms like Fidelity and Vanguard or Schwab, where they had a human advice component and they're kind of, you know, migrating from the other way. And even within some of these firms, they will say that they'll onboard the customer, the client digitally, but then sometimes there is a human advisor looking at that and maybe making adjustments. So, I mean, the biggest thing is that the lines really are blurred. And as the CEO and co-founder Zigbig pointed out, in the early days of internet banking, we talked about internet banks as separate entities. And now every bank has some kind of internet component. And I thought it was an interesting analogy, because I think that's where we're going to be seeing a lot of the financial advice business.
Yeah, that's a terrific analogy.
And actually, we like to call it the digital advice business today. It's more than just robo, right? It's advice across a whole spectrum of services, not just your investments, but your spending, your retirement income, your distribution strategy. It's putting all those pieces together. And eventually, I think you're going to see online estate planning as well.
Wow. And to sort of further complicate things, there's a growing group of financial advisors, like live human being financial advisors, that are focusing more on financial planning and really developing the relationship with their clients and helping them with insurance and cash flow and estate planning and college planning, all sorts of things. And they actually, those advisors are using the robos for the investment management portion of it. So even if you go to an advisor, sometimes you can find yourself like looking at a robo on the other end. So Sarah, let's start with breaking this down a little bit. I'd like to hear from you too, Ken, but let's start with Sarah on how should investors evaluate robos? Like, what are the, you know, Ken touched on kind of the high level, what he uses for the rankings, but from your perspective, what should people like really be looking for? What features are important, and, you know, anything else they should either keep in mind or avoid?
Well, I mean, my takeaway is that it really is going to depend on what your priorities are and where you are as an investor. Because in kind of my assessment, there's no robo-advisor that does it all perfectly. So, you know, if you really value a great digital experience, you might be looking for a certain robo-advisor versus if you want the human end, like a really hands-on, more human experience, the digital side may not be as good. Likewise, there are some of the robo-advisors are starting to do a very good job kind of answering to, you know, maybe some of the bigger concerns of, say, millennial investors, how to balance multiple needs, multiple savings goals, how to manage debt, all of that. And then there are other robos that are actually skewing toward maybe an older audience worried about, you know, really in the thick of retirement savings and planning. And then still, you know, to make things even more complicated, some robos have gotten pretty good at helping retirees convert their nest eggs to retirement income. So I hate to say it, but it is, I mean, I've thought through the question myself. And if a friend said to me, which robo advisor should I pick? I would not probably not be able to give them a single answer. I think I would have to ask some more questions before I could say, well, these are the ones that rank high with what you need.
Good perspective. Ken, any thoughts on how investors should evaluate robos or digital?
Sure, absolutely. Sure, thank you. I like that word. Maybe it's because we own digitaladvice.com as a URL. It's actually true. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. But the way I would do it is I would start out with fees first. You know, fees are such an important determinant of future investment performance. There's been a lot of studies. Morningstar has the most famous one, that fees are the biggest determinant of future investment performance. So I would generally like kind of cross out the highest cost ones as ones that I'm not interested in. You know, this will help you narrow them down. Then I would look at performance, because I think once you have the lowest fee ones and you look at then maybe like the top half of the performance ones, you're going to be left with three or four. And then I would look at features. I think that that's a great way to go through and narrow it down very simply for yourself. You know, generally speaking, I want a robo that's pretty low cost, that performs well, and then has the feature set that I'm looking for. And I think with the variety that you have today, you know, you're going to get there.
Is all this stuff pretty transparent? Is it pretty easy to find out what the fees are and what the, you know, mix is?
Look, I think that we help with that transparency, but I don't think that it's easy for an individual investor to really dig down and understand what that is. That's why we came up with the Robo Ranking, and that's kind of our mission at Backend Benchmarking, is to provide more transparency. That's why our logo looks like a window pane.
Nice. So I had planned on asking you both about the potential risks in using robos, but we've got some great listener questions that I think kind of get to those risks. One of them says, with interest rates being near zero, a Barron's article last week mentioned dividend stocks instead of bonds for the 60-40 mix. Are robos smart enough to factor that in, as well as other assets like gold? So that's an excellent question. So how sophisticated are these models, and can they kind of take broader economic data into account, like low interest rates that are likely to stay low for a few years, or look at alternative asset classes like gold? Let's start with Ken.
Oh, thanks. So I would say that I don't think that they're smart enough yet. Because in my mind, the growth part of the market has been huge over the last 10 or 15 years. And I have not seen one robo go overweight growth. So I think that there's some evolving to go with robos. I think with interest rates being near zero, and you're asking whether dividend stocks instead of bonds for a 60-40 mix is good, I think that I wouldn't go that direction, just as this is my Condor Capital investment advisor hat kind of on, just because stocks have inherently more risk than bonds. And if you're missing that 40% to provide stability, that's a problem. You can't use dividend stocks to substitute for bonds. However, in the robo sense, you know, there are specific robos that let you kind of dial up the income a little bit more. And the one that actually kind of has this more thematic investing that kind of comes to mind is Morgan Stanley has that. So I would look to Morgan Stanley to do that for you. And they actually have a thematic one that's on the growth side, although it's pretty new still today.
Got it. Sarah, anything to add with sort of the sophistication of these portfolios, or just any other risks associated with them or things people should be wary of?
Well, and I mean, I agree with Ken. Probably they aren't that sophisticated in many cases yet. But we could also say the same thing. No offense to a lot of the great human advisors out there, but we could say the same thing. And I mean, I guess for me, I look at this from the perspective of, you know, how it ties in with the investor behavior. You could have a perfectly sophisticated and smart portfolio, but if you as an investor are making dumb decisions, if you're pulling out money at the wrong time, if you, you know, it doesn't really matter. And so again, going back to, while fees and performance and all of that is very important, I also think that you have to have buy-in with the robo-advisor. You need to trust that it's going to work and not be, you know, questioning it and pulling out at the wrong time. Otherwise, again, it doesn't really matter what the portfolio does.
Yeah. I love your point that not everyone gets perfect advice from human advisors, and even if they do, they don't always follow it. But your last point, I think, is also really interesting. And, you know, in our story, we note that the clients or customers of robo-advisors actually were remarkably consistent, and most of them stayed invested. They didn't sell in a panic at the end of March. And you noted, Sarah, that many of them actually consistently added to their position. So it's interesting to me because a lot of financial advisors say that their value add is that investor behavior portion of it, but it seems like the robos, maybe it's a self-selecting group, or maybe it's something the robos themselves are doing, but they're doing a pretty good job of keeping people invested. We're getting another. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Sure. I was just going to add one more thing, because I think it's hard to make generalizations, and that although that did happen this time, I think it has to do a bit with the type of decline that we had. It was when the economy was, you know, flush with cash, and the government funded in a lot more cash, and so it was a different type of recession than in the past. So although this time people put money in, I don't know if we got into an 08 scenario, whether that would exactly happen the same way. But I don't think that people would be doing anything different with robos than they do with their personal account.
Yeah, great. Sorry. Great point. No, I think that's an excellent point. What kind of personalized advice can people get from these robos? Like, can you call someone and say, I just lost my job, I'm panicking, should I change my asset allocation? Or do they take into account other things like how much cash you may have or other investments you have outside of the robo?
Do you want me to
either
do
one.
That one?
Yeah, sure. Let's start with Ken. Sorry.
Okay. I jumped in. So they have, many of them, not all of them, have access to individual advisors. Sometimes it's kind of an upgrade situation, like Vanguard, for instance, has two levels of service. So you can obviously get more customized with all the different things that are coming about in your life when you can talk to an individual. I think when you actually employ a robo-advisor to do your planning and these types of things, you really have to decide whether you want to hire yourself a bit, because you have to be very diligent in putting in the information in order to get out the advice that's correct. And as we know, it's kind of garbage in, garbage out, so you got to make sure that it's pretty accurate, et cetera. And I think robos do an excellent job, and I think it's only getting better.
Good. Sarah, anything to add?
Well, I think, you know, you talk about someone losing the one thing that maybe a traditional human advice relationship can have is just that. It's a relationship. And, you know, that building up the relationship over time, a good human advisor will really understand all the different components that go into your financial plan and your concerns. Do I think that robo-advisors are quite there yet? Probably not, because even if you can call a human advisor, it may not be a dedicated human advisor. It might be part of, you know, someone who's on your team. And, you know, that might be a little bit harder. That can take years in the making to really develop a good relationship with an advisor who's going to help you answer the question, honestly, I've lost my job. How do I deal with it? So I don't know if we're quite there yet, but is it better than the alternative, which would be trying to figure it out by yourself? Probably.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, too. I mean, I'm not sure that robo-advisors are meant to even replace traditional human financial advisors, but not everybody has access to a financial advisor. And if it's a robo versus no one, you're better off with a robo. A robo versus a human, well, if it's a good human, you'll certainly get more personalized advice, and it will probably be better. One last question, maybe, unless someone sneaks in. Would you recommend robo accounts be looked at more to diversify your overall portfolio? So I'm not sure if they're saying like that the account itself is a diversifier, but I think it raises kind of the interesting point, like how do you use them? Like, does it make sense to put just a portion of your portfolio into a robo, or is it more like an all or nothing thing? Does it only make sense if the bulk of your assets are in that account? Ken?
So robos generally have very diversified accounts. I think that the question's kind of asking, you know, if you had something that's undiversified, can you use it to diversify it? That's kind of how I read into it. And most robos can't really take into consideration outside assets or large kind of undiversified position. However, there is one that does, and that's SIGFIG. They have the ability to bring in a large unrealized gain and actually work on a diversification strategy for you. So they're a little bit more flexible in that. The other ones that could do that, I think, a little bit, are the ones that are more hybrid, so you're actually talking to a person and you have more of a relationship. But as Sarah said, it's not the same as a relationship that you have with a regular advisor, a human advisor, because that advisor obviously is going to know you better.
And SIGFIG, once again, was the highest ranked for this year on the Barron's back-end benchmarking ranking. Although, as I said earlier, they all really did turn out quite well. There weren't any real dogs among this, I think. I think this is pretty much all the time we have for today. I really appreciate you guys joining me. I want to give you each a chance, Ken, first, and then Sarah, if there's anything else that you think people need to know when considering whether or not a robo is right for them.
You know, besides reading the Barron's article, in a week we're going to come out with our report, which is free to anybody who signs up at backendbenchmarking.com, and I encourage you to read it and learn a little bit more about robos. Thank you very much, Beverly.
Great. Thanks. Sarah, any last bit of advice for folks?
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, I actually have had a robo-advisor for the last couple of years. You know, have I gotten, going back to the point of, you know, do I have a human who's answering questions that I have about bigger picture financial plans or worries? I don't. But do I feel like it's a great way to, you know, kind of take, you know, not have to worry and about diversification and everything else? I do. So, I mean, that's kind of my parting words. I do think it's an interesting field, and I'm excited to see what happens. I think this is just, we're very early in the evolution, and that eventually robots are going to become very sophisticated in terms of being able to look at other aspects of our portfolios and our financial lives.
I totally agree. They've made leaps and bounds in the past 10 years, and another 5 or 10, they'll be completely different products probably. All right. Well, thank you both, Sarah and Ken, for joining me today. Great having you.
My pleasure.
And thanks to you listeners. We hope you listen to our next episode. Thanks, Ken. Listen for our next episode for an update on the COVID-19 treatments and vaccines with Barron's Senior Managing Editor Lauren Rublin and healthcare industry reporter Josh Nathan-Katsas. Thanks again, and stay safe, everyone.